This podcast is being sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Come visit us at ColdSlitterPodcast.com and then click on the link through our front page to MyComicShop.com. Shop there and keep the podcast going free. And you'll get new releases of comic books delivered right to your door. MyComicShop.com through ColdSlitterPodcast.com. Do it today. The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
And not as always, I am not Tim D-O-double-G. You know, Tim decided that he's just too cool for this type of thing anymore, and he's ready to move on to other things. He's got a cooking podcast he's going to be starting next week, and I hear there's a gardening show that he has in the works, so keep your eye out for those. But this week we do have Agent_70 here with me.
Yeah! What's up, everybody?
And from PopCultureNetwork.com, I am Dirt.
Yeah!
One or two tears there. Okay. So, luckily, Roddy Cat, even though he couldn't be here tonight, has made a comprehensive list of news articles for us to discuss.
Yay! Go, Roddy Cat!
And when I say comprehensive, I don't think he's missed a big story. There's like 9,000 articles on this list.
I mean, we are in the wake of New York Comic Con, so there's still lots of stuff, you know, kind of.
There's the January
emanating from that, right?
And he started a section just about variant covers that get announced and stuff. So, I mean, this guy's on the ball. It's almost like he should have some sort of maybe social networking platform that he could, you know, send out links to all this stuff through. Like maybe if he had like a Twitter account, he could call it something like News Nerds Need or something like that, where he could send out links to all of these articles so people could follow this stuff, because there's a lot of stuff going on.
That's right.
Yeah, Roddy Cat, that idea is just for you, okay?
Yes. Nobody, that's a fine idea.
Nobody else steal that, okay.
No.
I wonder, Tim usually tweets out the show link, and I don't know how to do that. Do you know how to do that?
I haven't the foggiest.
Yeah, it's probably the
well, I do the sounds, people.
I throw up pictures on the screen. What else am I supposed to do here?
Exactly. We all have our roles.
I know there's got to be some way to do it. So here, we'll kind of mess around with that, but let's go ahead and get started on some of these news stories, since there are so many. Of course, the number one big thing from the last 24 hours is, of course, the Age of Ultron trailer. Do they call it a trailer, or do they just call it a teaser?
I think it's I think they literally call it a teaser trailer. It's 2 minutes long, so it's pretty.
It's not really a teaser, because it is 2 minutes, but right. At the same time, there's a whole lot of shots of stuff getting punched and blown up and thrown and people yelling, and not a whole lot of dialogue or anything like that. You just basically get Ultron giving his
monologuing,
his evil monologue, and everyone else just kind of getting punched and thrown around. And
sure, and looking desperate and beaten and worn down.
So what'd you think?
I enjoyed it. I when I had heard that it had leaked, I did not want to watch it. But I guess Marvel decided to get out in front of it. Yes, exactly. I did not watch the early leak that I guess was of a slightly inferior quality. But Marvel decided to get in front of it, issue their own official trailer. had it was we neglected to mention that they had Marvel had teased this at the end of this week's episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It was an incentive for people to tune in. They were going to play it, I guess, after next week's episode. But But what ended up happening is that it leaked, and Marvel tweeted, "Damn Hydra" or something like that. And basically, you know, they're, you know, I guess one of the one of the tenets of public relations now is to get in front of a story. And so what they did was they got in front of this leak and decided to just preempt it and say, all right, so we'll spill the trailer, we'll release the trailer a little bit early, you know, to the detriment of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, with that ratings bump.
Although I wonder if maybe they'll have some sort of recut special one that they'll play during Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Possibly. I mean, it's less than a week to recut it, so...
You know what they should do is, for this next week, just give somebody on the show a camcorder and have everybody on the show, just backstage while they're filming Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., put on, like, a Thor wig, grab a Captain America Halloween shield, grab a Black Widow wig, and just recut their own version of that trailer with all of them playing the different
parts. That's funny.
Halloween costume supplies, that would be golden.
What's funny is that I think Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is coming off a very good episode. I don't, you know, I know you don't watch it, spoiler alert. They introduced a Marvel hero, another former, or at least who becomes an agent
Howard
of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Duck.
Yes. Spoiler alert.
Was it really?
No.
Oh. Okay.
It was actually...
You said that like that. Like, what?
No. Yeah, so seriously, right? Deadpan. Deadpan humor. That's my specialty. It was... They actually introduced the character of Mockingbird, Bobby Morse.
Oh, okay.
And it was done very well. And, you know, they're building towards something in this, you know, at least in this half of the season. And... it was just the perfect time for them to premiere this trailer because they started with something that people are talking about positively, which is the first appearance of Mockingbird in the TV or / Marvel cinematic universe. And now they were going to show the trailer as part of as an incentive to watch next week's episode, and that's been kind of, you know, the steam's been taken out of that a bit, but as I was saying, the show, in my opinion, was never that bad. I think it's improving leaps and bounds over where it was last year. I know that you don't watch it, but it's not, you know, it's not something that I think would be terribly hard to jump into.
Well, it's one of those things that when the first season appears, maybe on Netflix or Amazon Prime or something like that, I may go and do kind of like what I've been doing with Fringe, is I've been catching up on Fringe because I never watched it when it was on, and I'm just cutting through to like the key episodes, so I'm not watching everything that happens in every season.
Sure.
But I've gone to, you know, like the Wikipedia page and looked at what are the big episodes, and I'm watching those episodes because I don't really care about, you know, everything that happens. I just want the big, you know, story structure ones. So
gotcha.
I figure I may do that with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I heard that definitely halfway through the first season it really kicked into high gear.
Right.
From there, it's been a lot better.
It got its footing, right. I would say that it got its footing. The showrunners figured out what to do. So, you know, but in any event, with regards to the Avengers trailer, I enjoyed it. Like you said, there's a lot of, there's a distinct lack of dialogue other than, you know, what you hear from Spader's Ultron basically monologuing his way through the trailer. Did you see anything that caught your eye?
Well, the one thing that seemed kind of odd to me is that they made it look like Ultron somehow grew out of Tony Stark's armor program.
Right. I think that's part of the movie origin for Ultron.
Right. And that, you know, that of course stands out to me as being like, what? But I mean, I understand why they have to do that. You know?
Right.
I mean, it's obviously one of those movie things that they have to play around with.
Right. Accepted that. Isn't that sad? I've already accepted that. I'm like, you know what? That's just part of how they're going to have to mold, the new story.
The one thing I was kind of surprised with is they didn't really show anything tying into any, like, I expected maybe there might be a scene of maybe Star-Lord in the background of a fight scene or something where they're going to tie in some other part of the cinematic universe, and didn't see any of that. But, I mean, again, this is just the first trailer. They didn't talk a whole lot. There's not a whole lot of story points that they give out. So that may be something that comes, you know, down the line.
Absolutely, absolutely. What they did show, though, were the, I guess, first appearances, well, no, the second appearances now of Quicksilver, the Scarlet Witch. Mm-hmm. They did tease a character who, after doing some reading on the internet, might be Ulysses Claw. Claw.
Oh, you mean K-L-A-W?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Ulysses Claw.
I didn't know his first name was Ulysses.
Well, yeah. Because we all know him as Claw. Right. But what's funny is that is Andy Serkis in the trailer, and if Ulysses Claw is around, can Black Panther and Wakanda and Vibranium be all that far behind? So, you know, that's an interesting little tidbit. I'm looking for, you know, we're all obviously looking forward to this. It's kind of funny seeing other pop culture networks, other pop culture sites, such as Grantland, you know, from ESPN.com, talk about the Avengers trailer and how between now and May, we're just going to be, dissecting every bit of information and every, trailer we get for Avengers, Age of Ultron until then.
Yeah, I saw some site, I think it was Comic Vine, did one of those scene-by-scene breakdowns of the trailer. And, you know, I understand why they do that. It's definitely clickbait, and people will be interested on it. But, you know, I guess I'm just kind of starting to get to that age where it's just like, okay, whatever, you know. Like, if anything, I'm just kind of angry right now that I have to wait till May.
Yes. You know?
It's like, don't tell me about the movie until, like, February if it's coming out in May. You know what I mean? It's like, just let things simmer for a while. But
what's very funny is that this isn't the kind of movie you even need to tease. It's not.
Right. Yeah, they can have no commercials. It's a big day, number two next to it, and that would be it, and it would be fine. But
yeah, like, here, guess what's coming? Guess what's coming? That's it. That's all you need to show. It's pretty funny.
But, I mean, how else do you steal thunder away from the DC movies unless you have ultra cool trailers for your Marvel movies?
Well, you know what's funny is that this was a grand way for them to steal that hype, because the hype was based off of the announcements. But what you have here is it's not a physical palpable thing, but it's a visual thing. You see this, you know, product on the screen, and you know, it basically, what did Quesada say? Broke the internet in half.
I don't know if it goes that far, but nonetheless, it was cool. So everyone's talking about that. All right, let's move on. We've got plenty of news here to talk about. AT&T, of all places, apparently UVerse has their own development studio for making original shows and documentaries, and they released a video about the RAID Studio, which is the Royal Academy of Illustration and Design, I think that's what it stands for.
Okay.
And a Canadian group that has gotten together. Guys, Francis Manipal, Marcus Tu, I can't remember.
I think it's Toe, but okay.
Okay, well, whatever. But anyway, four or five of these guys, they did
Ramon Perez, Marcus Toe, Francis Manipal, and Kalman Andrzejewski.
Yeah, good luck with that one.
Hey, Andrzejewski.
I was able to watch about the first 5-10 minutes of it before I had to stop. Just ran out of time. But it's very well done. They got Stan Lee to come in and do a couple intro voiceovers, whatever, for it. But it's really about these guys who are in just this collaborative art studio, and they're all drawing, you know, different comics for different companies, different storylines. Some guys are doing work for Marvel, some for DC, some are doing independent image stuff, you know, whatever. But they all work together. They meet, you know, like every day they sit down and have meetings and kind of go over what everyone's doing and who's going to cons and whatever. And one of the things I thought was interesting is they have a PR guy to talk for the group. even, and they have, I think his name is Steve Christie. He used to be the guy who talked for Arkea before Arkea got bought out by Boom Studios. Right. Yeah. So now he's working with them. But it talks about their personal lives, how they got into comics. It shows the process of them doing it. Some of them, you know, drawing and then tracing on the light boxes. A lot of them drawing right onto the tablets, you know, right there on the screen. And they're showing each other the different work that they're doing and collaborating, you know, how do I get this effect and whatever. So it really is a neat thing to sit and watch. And it's, like I said, it's really well done. It does look professional. Mm. And it runs about a half hour. So nice. Definitely something you want to look at if you're interested in comics.
Right, and the creation of comics. So right. I'm definitely interested in watching this.
You want to see how the sausage is made.
That's right.
Where you want to go. All right, next up, Marvel is teasing more and more of these event comics, basically retreading old events, which a lot of people are speculating is coming out of Secret Wars, the return of Secret Wars. Secret Wars looks like we'll have some sort of multiverse aspect to it. You know, DC's doing multiversity, so now Marvel's doing a multiverse story. And all of these teasers, it looks like there's something subtly different about them if you look at the details from the teaser artwork. Now, some of them are blatant. Like one says Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies.
Right.
That's kind of blatant. But there's one called Planet Hulk. But it looks like a whole bunch of Hulks and Devil Dinosaur and Red Hulk all battling on some planet.
Oh, you're forgetting the one character at the top of that teaser image. The character that appears to be Captain America with a battle axe.
Yeah,
exactly.
He-Man X.
That's right.
But it looks like all of these teasers, they've been throwing out these teasers for House of M, for Civil War, for Old Man Logan, for, you know, all of these kind of big Marvel events of the last, I don't know, decade, 15 years, whatever. Right. It looks like somehow they all tie into that multiverse aspect, which is funny. Spider-Verse is growing out of Amazing Spider-Man, and it's been a lot more popular than they thought, so it's spawning off a whole bunch more stuff that was never meant to originally do. Now they're going to be doing this. You know, Ultimate Universe is collapsing on itself and failing, but now it looks like they're trying to push back out. So I don't know. Does that mean the Ultimate Universe is going to be saved, or is it going to collapse as everything else grows out? I don't know.
I think it's going to be saved as a pocket or as just one of the many facets of the multiverse.
I expect it to continue with a lot more crossovers like we're seeing now with
All New X-Men.
Ultimate Spider-Man and All New X-Men, right. Yeah. I expect something along those lines to keep going on. But
I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. You know, as you said, we've talked about it before, the Ultimate Universe still has a few good characters and storylines and character arcs left that, you know, that needs to be told. And it's a shame that really what's alive now is just based around Miles Morales. I mean, you know, it's a great book. I read it, but there's probably still much more out there.
And, like, Ultimate FF was the greatest story, but the artwork was just so terrible that it's almost impossible to convince anybody to read it because it would hurt your eyes for the first couple of minutes. All right, anyway. Guardians of the Galaxy has now grossed more than $700 million worldwide.
Wait for it.
So apparently you can do a random movie about a bunch of characters nobody's ever heard of before, especially if it comes out during a weak summer when there's not a lot of competition.
Sure.
One thing they've been saying about this year with movies is it's a terrible year for movies, that movies overall are down compared to the last several years. There haven't been very many blockbusters. There's just not a lot.
What I was going to say is there were candidates for being blockbusters, but they just were not very good. And so, you know, what the summer needed was this one movie that basically, you know, captured everyone's imagination and ran away with everyone's money. Have you gotten to see Guardians yet?
No, I still haven't. and the funny thing is I have a copy. Like, I have a copy in my house that I could watch at any time, but I just never have time at the right time to sit and watch it. So
okay. I don't want to overhype it. It's worth it.
Well, $700 million is hyping it for you right now.
That's right.
So there you go. All right. Let's see what else we have here. Uncanny Avengers is going to be relaunching with a new number one starting after Axis finishes. So right. It seems like all of Uncanny Avengers was really leading up to Axis, because it was all about Red Skull, and he stole, you know, first issue, he stole Charles Xavier's body. You know, second issue, he was taking the brain out, you know, all the stuff that's leading to Axis now. So Uncanny Avengers will, it's going to be the same writer, same artist. What is it, Remender and Akuma?
Remender, right.
But it's going to be a new team, a new confragulation of
Avengers. Configuration.
So anyway.
Lovely.
Mark Millar cannot get Jupiter's Legacy out on schedule, but yet he has now announced there will be a prequel series. So I guess he wants to go back and show how all the characters got there before issue one. I don't know if this is a time filler until he can finish.
Possibly.
Jupiter's Legacy, but...
Is Jupiter's Legacy, has it become known that the delays on it are art-related or Millar-related?
No idea.
Okay.
I mean, it's Frank Quietly doing the artwork, so it shouldn't be that.
Right, he's not that slow, right?
No,
he's not one of the slow artists.
So it's no, not
like
I
John. Don't. It's not like it's John Cassidy. Uh oh.
Or Jim Lee.
Uh oh.
All right. Next up, Pat Broderick is returning to DC Comics after 20 years.
It's a name I recognize.
Yeah, well, I remember him doing a lot of, like, Batman and I think Green Lantern. Was it Green Lantern? Yeah, Green Lantern stuff that he was doing. Fury of Firestorm, he helped launch that one. Batman Year 3, he drew. He did Swamp Thing, Green Lantern. He went back to Marvel, did Alpha Flight, Doom 2099 for a while. When the comic book market collapsed in 95, he actually switched over into advertising. And he did stuff like the Jimmy Neutron movie.
Oh, all right.
Did not know. But anyway, basically, I guess DC reached out to him, and they came to some sort of agreement, and he's coming back to DC.
Good for him.
He can't say yet what he's doing, but Dan DiDio sent him a script package, and he is getting back to work. So there you go.
Welcome back, Pat Broderick.
Yay.
All right, yay. I was about to say, I don't even know who he is. I didn't feel like clapping.
Oh.
That's terrible.
Dave Gibbons is the official comics laureate of the UK.
The very first.
He's an ambassador of comics who will work with schools, educators, and more to show how comics can contribute to literacy and learning.
Gotta love it. The Brits lead the way when it comes to this stuff.
Does it pay?
Probably not.
Oh, that's a shame. Because otherwise I'd throw my hat in the ring, you know.
Well, you know, somebody what? Come to think of it, maybe they do receive something, because there is something behind being named, you know, poet laureate. Now it's comic laureate. So.
Yeah, they probably, you know, pay for travel, a hotel, and per diem, you know.
Sure.
Something along those. I mean, you're not going to be rich off of it, but they're going to take care of you while you're doing it, I'm sure. Let's see. DC Comics is releasing a TV guide, basically, excuse me, covering their shows that are out this year. Of course, Arrow, their big one that's been going on for, was it 3 years now?
I believe so.
Season?
I believe so.
We got Flash at launch. We've got Gotham that has launched, and now Constantine will be launching shortly. And so they're going to be releasing a special edition that features essential reads from over the years. So basically, GCPD, a Flash issue, a Green Arrow issue, and a Constantine issue all in the one package. You can download it basically anywhere digital. So you can get the Nook store has it, the Amazon store has it, Comixology has it, iTunes has it, there's a standalone Google Play version of it. All of them have some sort of guided view or whatever on it, so you can go check all that stuff out.
Very quickly, I just did a quick scan of our list of news items, and I see, I think it was an article I read today where Geoff Johns, in talking about the relationship between the DC Marvel, the DC movie universe and the TV universe, basically characterized them as being parts of a multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
Where they don't necessarily have direct tie-ins, but there is the opportunity for crossovers.
Right.
And all I could think of is, oh my God, Morrison's gotten into into TV and movies too with this multiversity stuff.
I think the idea comes from DC has always had more of that general allowance for an artist to tell the story that they want to tell. And that's why you have stuff like Dark Knight Returns, and you have stuff like Superman Earth 1, right. And you have, John Constantine is Hellblazer, but then he's also Constantine in the regular DC universe. It's just whatever, if the writer has a good enough story, if the artist has some sort of vision behind it, then they just allow it to be made as it is. And so, you know, the Batman movies, the Christopher Nolan 3 movies have nothing to do with anything else Batman. No other movies, right. No other TV shows, comics, cartoons.
Right.
You know, they just kind of allow people to use the characters and create what they're going to create. So
the kicker is trying to explain that to people who don't realize that.
So the TV universe is its own thing. The movie universe they're actually trying to tie together. TV universe, I don't necessarily think... You know, Flash and Arrow are obviously connected. They're on the same network, and that helps.
Right.
But I don't think Gotham and Constantine are necessarily part of that same universe.
Right.
And I don't think even Smallville necessarily, even though it was from CW, I don't think it technically crosses over into either of these two.
I don't believe so either.
Because technically he should be Superman flying around right now, and there's no Superman. And, you know, they don't want to pay to bring him back, you know, to do some episodes of The Flash. So,
right.
It's just, you know, they have to make people understand that they're not connected. Unlike Marvel, which is trying to tie
everything,
S.H.I.E.L.D. and Captain America and Avengers, and yeah, everything has to be one. Which, I mean, on the one hand, it's great to have that continuity of the shared universe, but on the other hand, a lot of times it constrains you from what you're allowed to do. Because you have to do something
that's within those bounds, right?
Right. So, I mean, that was one thing about the New 52. I remember a lot of people were kind of excited because they were allowed to reinvent characters and kind of change things in a different, better way. And I think of it more the way that Kirkman has used Walking Dead, the TV show, to be different from Walking Dead, the comic.
Right.
I mean, it's the same. It's the same characters, you know, it's zombies, it's, Rick and Carl and
right. Whatever,
but there are a lot of differences there that allow it to be its own thing.
But I was going to say, well, I'm sorry to interrupt, but one of the cool things that the opportunity that it gives Kirkman is, oh, if I could change one thing about this, this is what I do and see where it goes. So right. It does give him a chance to revisit and kind of revamp on his own because it's his work, which is the best part. You know, he has that input.
Having, not being someone that actually watches a lot of TV in general, I have seen the first two episodes of The Flash, and I've really liked it.
I like them, too. I've seen the first three, and I've liked them.
I've watched the first three, I think, of Gotham, and I don't like it as much as I like The Flash.
I haven't seen an
much
episode.
More of a, I'm much more of a Batman fan in general than I am of The Flash, but I prefer The Flash TV show. I think it's a better show.
It's better done. It's just well done. I like it for, you know, for what it is. Let's see if we can get through some more of these news items. See if we can. I'm looking at this list. I'm like, holy cow.
Okay, here, let's jump through a few things here. Tom Hardy has been knocked to be the Apocalypse in the next X-Men movie, but of course that's a Fox thing, so that's not going to tie in with anything else. Juggernaut will be returning in Amazing X-Men, so people looking for that. Of course, the tie-in is former Juggernaut Vinnie Jones is going to be on Arrow as the character Brick. Grant Morrison has realized that nobody understands multiversity, so he's making his own handbook for multiversity.
I love it!
80 pages, $7.99.
No one understands what you're doing, Morrison!
5 variant covers on that book.
Oh, my God.
But he's got to lay it out there so people understand. Otherwise, it's never going to work.
Goodness gracious.
Let's see. The Flash is getting Roger Howarth to be Iris's mentor.
Okay.
Not sure who that is, but oh well. Firestorm is coming to The Flash.
Yes.
So Robbie Arnell has given an interview to ScreenRant.com talking about that. And, of course, Flash has been picked up for a full season from the CW. They originally, I think, said, what, 13? They expanded to 13, and now they've expanded to a full season. So,
right.
Of course, it's the highest-rated debut they've had in years, so that helps.
Good for them.
Oh,
and Ronnie Raymond, the character... You know, one of the characters behind Firestorm did, I believe it was his first appearance in this week's episode of The Flash. Spoiler alert, too late.
Oh, just appearing as himself?
Right.
Okay. Whoever this is,
Morena Baccarin.
Okay.
An actress from Homeland is joining the Gotham cast. I don't think that they've revealed which character she's going to be playing, but it's cool that you know, some of these more higher profile actors and actresses are being recruited into these comic properties. Spoiler alert: they may have revealed who the new Robin is in Batman and Robin.
Okay, did you look at this story? Are you familiar with the spoiler? Okay. The solicits for January leaked out online a little early, you know, ahead of previews, which always happens. No big deal.
Oh, I did see this.
Peter Tomasi just went ahead and spoiled it on his Twitter since the solicits were, you know, out there already.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it looks like Damian is returning. The whole storyline of Robin Rises is 100% what it says it is.
Right.
And when he returns,
he's done risen.
He's going to have superpowers of some kind. So the teaser image they show is bullets deflecting off his chest like Superman. So
very funny.
The question is, you know, of course, the dynamic between Batman and Robin was different when it was his actual son. So now, what happens when his actual son is more powerful than he is? How does this change that dynamic even further? And it's one of those things where I could see it getting old very quickly, but at the same time, the idea of Damian as Robin was one of those things that people didn't think was going to work, and it did.
Yes, it
so,
definitely did.
We'll just have to, you know, wait and see how it plays out, but it's definitely an interesting take on the idea. Charles Soule, of course, is leaving for Marvel to be an exclusive writer there, so Landry Walker is taking over the Red Lanterns book. Warner Brothers announced that Static Shock is going to be moving forward as a live-action project, but they haven't said if that's, you know, video on demand, if that's a movie, if that's a TV show, you know, whatever, but Static
right.
Shock is live-action. Let's see. There was an interview with several people from Vertigo. I've seen this in a couple different places. Jim Lee talked about it. Dan DiDio talked about it. Neil Gaiman talked about it. Basically, Vertigo is going to be rebranding and kind of doing a soft relaunch in 2015. They have a lot of books kind of wrapping up this year and stuff that, you know, just kind of ran their course. And one of those books is Ferrest, which they announced will be ending in January. It was a tie-in for Fables, and they announced that Fables would be ending. Fables and Ferrest are both ending because Bill Willingham wants to end them, not because
wow.
of Fables or anything. He just did a long run on the books, and he basically said, I've told the stories I wanted to tell, and so it's time to end them. So those are ending.
Oh, it might be time for me to jump on and catch up, because I've heard so many good things about Fables for so long that now that I know that it's ending, it might be time to start going back and reading it.
I tried, and it's one of those where it didn't hook me in the first couple issues, so I just kind of gave up on it. I may go back and try it again at some point, but let's see. Also ending that month is going to be She-Hulk.
They just
couldn't do it. People hate lawyers. What are you going to do?
Boo! This week's issue is so good. And I don't think Soule knew this, or he may not have wanted to spoil it to me when I met him at New York Comic Con, but I definitely was, you know, a big supporter of She-Hulk, you know, and I'm very disappointed to hear this. But the solicits contain language the solicit for this book contains language that sort of teases that there might be a soft reboot in order.
Well, I wonder if she's joining a team.
Possibly.
Because it says when one door closes, another one opens, and that makes me wonder if she's actually going to be joining a team somewhere. Because she did do Future Foundation, for a while, even though that was an ill-fated series. But, Dan Slott couldn't make it work. Peter David couldn't make it work. Charles Soule couldn't make it work. Although, I think the artwork had much more to do with the failure of this particular incarnation.
Right. I think a lot of people just don't dig the Polito artwork. And then there was the interlude with Ron Wimberly, who was normally a pretty good artist, but I think he was a little out there for the two issues that he was doing on this book.
And X-Factor is getting canceled again.
Too bad.
Peter David has tried everything with X-Factor over the last, 30 years? And when it was the original X-Men, when it was what you see is the all-new X-Men was X-Factor back in the day, it really did great. Everything was fine on the book, I think, until they switched with the new team. When they brought in Strong Guy and
well, you know what's funny about that? But what's funny about that is I think that was Peter David's heyday on X-Factor, is when they brought in Strong Guy and
I don't think it ever reached the same heights. Like, I think a lot of people gave it credit for daring to do something different, bring in these new characters, give them a voice, and a lot of people liked the idea that they were branching out beyond the original X-Men. But I don't think it ever, when it had the big launch, everybody bought the book because it's a collector's item, it's going to be worth something, and now you can find them in the 10 for a dollar box. But back then, it was just like, it's exciting, it's different, it's something new, but over time they've just never really been able to latch on as that big of an important deal. And when they brought it back as all new X-Factor, that was their chance to really, hook everybody in and make it a huge title. And it just, for whatever reason, it didn't catch on. So issue 20 is going to be the final one of all new X-Factor.
Listen, we can have an entire discussion over beer, over how many, or over the fact that there's too many titles out in the market right now. There's too many X books. There's too many Avengers books. I dare say there's going to be too many Spider-Man books. There's just too many of some of these books out there, and there's a glut. There's a saturation of the market, and things can only go bad when that happens.
All right, moving on. Archie Comics is going to. A new drama on Fox.
This is cool news.
I don't know. The producer of Flash and Arrow is going to be attempting to bring Archie. This to me just reeks of Melrose Place and the OC, and like they're going to try to do it. It's going to be small town Midwestern America, but with the way Archie's been the last few years, it's not going to be, does Archie go out with Betty or Veronica? It's going to be Love Triangle.
Yeah.
Sex in the locker room. Is it Betty or Veronica?
Yikes.
That's just how I see it going down. And
yikes.
Not excited.
Yikes.
Let's see here. What else do we have? Marvel is introducing a new hearing impaired character, Sapphira. Sure, why not? but this is not the hearing impaired Hawkeye. It's not the hearing impaired Echo. This is a new hearing impaired character for all the hearing impaired fans. I don't know.
Okay, go Sapphira.
I guess. Funko and DC are going to be releasing mystery minis coming in January. Those are the little figures that are a couple inches big, come in a little box. You don't know which figure you get until you rip it open. As usual, there's several different Batmans recolored, but there will be Flash, Reverse Flash, Superman, Green Lantern, Harley Quinn, all those type characters. So if you love spending $6 on a figure and you don't know what you're getting until you open the box, there you go. There's new DC mystery.
There you go.
All right, that's going to do it for news. We're going to wrap up
there. Yay! Lots of news.
Oh, my gosh. Almost a whole hour of news. Well, we did start late, I guess.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Sir, what did you read? I don't see anything listed here.
I have a little story before we get into the reviews.
Uh-oh.
I was not able to read a whole bunch. I only read a handful of books this week. And the reason why is yesterday I get a call from my wife at about 1:30 in the afternoon. The school has called, and they said I need to go pick up my daughter or they're going to call an ambulance.
Whoa.
Because she fell down and hit her head on a table.
Whoa.
And so, of course, I've done a million wrestling shows. I've seen guys cut their foreheads open all the time, you know, on purpose, you know, much less getting banged up here and there. And I'm thinking it can't be that big of a deal, whatever. I'll go pick her up, but I'm sure in 20 minutes, you know, it's going to stop. No big deal. Walk in the office, have her pull off the bandage, and I can see the gash is so deep that the skin is curling into it, you know. So grab my son, stop by my wife's office, picked her up, and we go to the emergency room to the hospital. We're there for 4 hours. She ends up getting 5 stitches right across her eyebrow.
Mm.
They've got an antibiotic on it, trying to, you know, keep it from getting all nasty while it heals in this big, open, nasty wound.
Mm-hmm.
But needless to say, my day yesterday got completely screwed up. So even though we get Marvel books like a week in advance, we get the Image books usually on like the weekend before, IDW and Boom several days ahead of time. You know, even though we get them in advance, I still usually sit down on Wednesday and read them because that's the tradition.
That's right.
And so my Wednesday just kind of went out the window.
Yesterday. Yikes.
I've read a handful of things, not...
Sure, but not, we won't dwell too much on, you know... Well, you know, hopefully your daughter's doing better.
She's doing better. She'll be fine.
Shout out to Dirt's daughter.
So she got to stay home from school today, so she was at least excited for that. She got to sit at home and play Minecraft for...
Oh, my goodness.
So... I mean, what more do you want as a kid, right?
Right.
Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit coldslitterpodcast.com, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the right of the page. Scroll down and you'll be able to shop at Amazon through us. There you can buy books, games, movies, music, and much more at Amazon, while at the same time helping us manage the cost of our network and keep our podcast free for you.
It'd be kind of cool if they took the four shows the way that NXT is like the single A and Raw is like the majors. They took SmackDown and Main Event and kind of made them like double and triple A and moved everybody up like that. That'd be kind of cool.
Well, according to like nerds on the internet, NXT is number one.
Yeah, a lot of
really?
Yeah, a lot of they're like, oh, it's better than WWE. Why don't they put that on TV? And because it would crash and burn within the first month. It really would. It would turn into Raw.
I love Sam's love in HT. It's awesome. it's awesome.
I don't think he despises the presentation. I think he despises the talent on it.
I despise the recognition it gets. Like, I hate how people talk about it. And then they get butthurt when, like, the characters go to the main roster and they change their gimmick. They're like, who was he like these on NXT?
Yeah, they're terrible. They're terrible gimmicks for the main roster. Terrible.
Hi, this is Sam.
Hi, this is Greg.
And this is Don DeLaRente. And you listen to the brand new WrestleCast, the only pro wrestling podcast that provides color commentary with color.
And you can find us each week on the Cole Slither Podcast Network.
So, I did read a couple books, but I'm going to ask you about stuff here because you had stuff on your list.
Sure.
And I want to ask you about, since She-Hulk was in our news this week of having run its course now, well, not now, but in January.
Soon, right.
She-Hulk 9. Tell me about She-Hulk 9 and what happened.
She-Hulk 9, basically what it's a continuation of a story where someone is suing Steve Rogers for something he did before he became Captain America. I see my list on the screen.
Yeah, that was the wrong screen.
And She-Hulk, he's asked She-Hulk to defend him. And the surprise at the end of the last issue was that Matt Murdock Daredevil has been retained to represent the plaintiff in this action. He's basically suing Steve Rogers for the wrongful death, and what's revealed in this issue, he's suing Steve Rogers for the wrongful death of a brother. And without spoiling too much of the story, it's actually very well done. The lawyers out there will definitely appreciate reading this. You don't have to be a lawyer to enjoy it, though, because it's very straightforward. There's not much legalese. There's definitely some dramatic dialogue in here and some cool reveals. Like I said, I don't want to spoil too much of the story, but I think we've seen courtroom dramas before. I think Sol has a different take on it, obviously, with his background. And this is probably the best done civil court courtroom scene that I've seen in comics ever. It's just a fun read. I enjoyed it. There's a great twist at the end. The art does not detract. I don't, I'm not the biggest fan of Pulido's art, but I definitely, understand why some people aren't fans. It's not traditional superhero art, but I don't think it detracts. There we go! Is that the
boy
you were searching for?
My thumbnails were all messed up, so it was showing me the picture of one thing, but it was actually, a different image, so it took me a while to figure out what the right one was, but there you go. There's She-Hulk.
There you go. This is a clear candidate for my Click of the Week this week. And
really?
That's one of the reasons why I led off with it in my list of books.
All right, then. What about All New Ghost Rider?
Well, All New Ghost Rider reveals a little bit about the spirit that is inhabiting or co-inhabiting Robbie Reyes and basically a part of the 69 Charger that he stole from Vin Diesel. Some other character in this book. And Johnny Blaze is a guest star. He appeared at the end of the last issue, and this issue involves a confrontation that helps to reveal some of the background behind the spirit that that inhabits this car incarnation of Ghost Rider. So I don't want to spoil too much. There are some good character moments in this. I'm definitely looking forward to the next issue because of what's been revealed in this issue.
So they are tying it more into actual Ghost Rider.
Not yet, but they are.
But Johnny Blaze.
Right, exactly. I mean, what's cool is that they're showing that, yes, this is a Ghost Rider, but it's not necessarily related to how the previous Ghost Riders were, the previous incarnations of Ghost Rider. So I guess what they'll have to do is explain that. I'd like that it's not just another demon, at least for now. I'm already spoiling a little bit, but it's not just, Zarathos, the demon, possessing somebody else and Johnny Blaze is out there to draw, left out there to dry.
So is this the issue you want to jump in on, or do you want to jump in on the last issue?
You can jump in on this issue because there's plenty of action and there's a lot of explanation. But I think the last issue really helps bridge the gap in terms of, especially if you're familiar with the Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider, even the Dan Ketch Ghost Rider, just, previous Ghost Rider history.
Okay. All right. What about All New Invaders? Are you still liking this one as much as you did?
I am. This was a tough issue to read because this, I felt, was a drawn-out issue that I don't think should have been this long.
When you sigh like that, that's not a good sign.
I know. So, so we have here the direct follow-up to the revelation that the Invaders, this incarnation of the Invaders, were dealing with a Martian. And part of the Martian's quest, or I guess part of his master plan, was to take over some AI. And one of the byproducts of this quest to take over the AI that's in the Marvel Universe is that they tried to take over Jim Hammond, the original Human Torch, who is a synthesoid. Basically,
Wait, I thought
super
he was
duper.
An
I'm sorry?
I thought he was just an android.
Well, the difference that they tried to establish here and the distinguishing feature that that keeps Jim Hammond from being a true android is that his parts are almost like, or they're basically artificial organs as opposed to moving bits like the Vision, for example.
Hmm.
And that's the distinction they try to draw. And, you know, it's an interesting read in that regard, but one of the things that I found kind of, it was just a weird, you know, it was a weird story, it was a weird issue in that it was very angsty on the part, you know, Jim Hammond was very angsty. It's a byproduct of this, hostile takeover of his programming. And it just seemed there's something wrong with the voice that I was the writer Robinson was giving Jim Hammond. There just seemed to be something off. And the story, I wasn't very happy with this story, which was really some filler, to be perfectly honest, unless they play off more of what's happening in this issue and the next issue. We do get some more Invaders team building in this. Actually, you know what? Let me rephrase. because I had taken notes on this, but because we had some issues with the additions of the sheet, I'm starting to remember some of the notes I wrote down. Basically, this issue is a team building issue and an intervention issue. And that's what I was getting at with, you know, dealing with angsty Jim Hammonds. But this is also a way for the team to kind of rally around him and build itself up, you know, including some of the newer characters that were introduced, like the latest incarnation of the Iron Cross and Radiance, which is just a terrible name, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, this issue was pretty lackluster for me. You know, I did not enjoy this as much as I have in previous issues. This is definitely a filler, kind of in-between issue. I don't think the things that happened in this issue should have taken an entire issue to do. You know, this is something that an old-school comic would have dealt with in 3 or 4 pages, maybe 5.
Well, but that's the new...
I know, it's the new style.
Storytelling.
Right.
Yeah. That's how you got to do things nowadays.
Right.
All right, Spider-Verse, what's going on in Amazing Spider-Man?
Well, this issue of Amazing Spider-Man is still a team-up with Ms. Marvel.
Okay.
And the first half of this book deals with the new Ms. Marvel and Spidey teaming up for the first time to take down a Kree scientist named Dr. Minerva. And Dr. Minerva has been harvesting... inhuman cocoons, you know, folks with, if you haven't been keeping up with inhumanity and the wave of new humans, basically the Terrigen bomb that Black Bolt detonated has activated a lot of inhuman or latent inhuman DNA in a lot of humans who may be, you know, basically crossbred. And, you know, they basically enter into a cocoon stage to gestate and, you know, manifest their powers. And Dr. Minerva's basically been stealing these cocoons and trying to harvest their the powers that that these new humans would have and try to take them, because the Kree, as we know, and, you know, like if you're familiar with it, the Kree's evolution has stopped. And she's trying to use this to jumpstart, you know, a new wave of Kree evolution. And, you know, basically it's a game of keep away, because Spidey and Ms. Marvel are trying to keep this cocoon away from Dr. Minerva. And ultimately, we have the appearance of, oh, who is this? There is a character here that appears... No, he's from the Learning to Crawl. That's where it was. Exactly, the 1 point issues of Amazing Spider-Man.
The reason why they actually did those.
Exactly, they introduced that character into the main Spidey universe.
Gotcha.
and he becomes a member of the staff at Parker Industries. We do get the first appearance of Silk. Silk's new costume. Silk is the Asian chick that had been holed away by all these characters from Straczynski's run.
But is Silk the one that has the pheromone thing going on with Peter Parker and the two of them become like rabid animals with each other?
Yep. So, but like I said, this is just, you know, we see her kind of step out on her own and create a costume for herself. The second half of this book involves more Spider-Verse stuff, but it involves a character that is near and dear to many, many people, Mayday, May Parker, from the MC2 universe.
Right.
And some bad things happen to her family in this. It's a short story, but we see some very bad things happen, and we see her basically join up with the spiders who are surviving and trying to stay one step ahead of these hunters that are trying to exterminate all the spiders across the multiverse.
So still a good action yarn?
This issue is a tough issue to read from the standpoint of, if it's the first book you pick up and you're a new reader, I don't know if this is the best issue. This is definitely a good issue to tie.
Yeah, I don't know if Amazing Spider-Man has been new reader friendly for about 4 years.
I'm inclined to agree.
I mean, ever since I think the Gauntlet was about the last time that you could jump in on a Spider-Man story.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, I think Superior is a good time to jump in because you can just start fresh with this premise.
It was also a much better book. All right.
Ah!
Tell me about... I'm going to jump ahead here on your list of Deadpool. Deadpool is listed as an Axis tie-in.
It is an
Axis tie-in. Is this really an Axis tie-in?
It is a real Axis tie-in. It doesn't...
How real is this?
Okay, it's not really an Axis tie-in, but what it does do is establish how Deadpool gets to a certain point. I read Axis number 3 very, very recently, so it explains how Deadpool gets to where he is in Axis number 3, and it sort of wraps up a couple of loose ends, but then. You know what? I guess it really is a tie-in. What's funny about this is that it leads into what Axis is going to be, where we really don't know where it's going to be just yet. Axis number 3 just came out this week, and while we're being teased what happens with the solicits, right. It's funny that this issue of Deadpool kind of jumps straight into the effects of Axis on him, where the story in the main limited series hasn't gotten to that point yet. So there's two parts to this. I guess it is really a true tie-in in that, you know, it does kind of go in that direction.
So then let's take a moment to talk about Axis number 3.
All right.
Because I did forget to share the copy with you until earlier this afternoon. So
it's all right. I read it.
So I did not get a chance because of everything that happened yesterday. So
right.
That's part of the reason why I forgot about it. So what happens in Axis this week?
Spoiler alert. So basically what happens is Magneto has organized a team of villains and Deadpool. Because Deadpool's sort of in between.
Right.
And basically it seems like the villains turn the tide and the Red Skull is defeated. And we get to... And I'm cutting through a lot of the chase. And we get to the end of the book. There's a bit of a blow-up. We do get an Avenger quitting the team. And we're left with... what's coming up next, which is the Inversion. Now, I think what's happening here is that, you know, not everything is as it seems, and Remender is leaving the actual transformation into what the current state of the Marvel Universe is for the beginning of the next book. As I said,
do you remember how many issues Axis is? Is it 6 or is it 5?
9, I think.
Oh, 9?
Mm-hmm. I think it's 9. Let me pop it open. I believe it does say so in the book.
Great googly moogly. Well, one thing, yes. I noticed, while you're looking that up real quick, I'll stall here for a second. One thing I did notice is looking at issue 1, the little electric line dividing the heroes and villains is horizontal.
Right.
And you've got the heroes on top, villains on the bottom. Issue 2, it's slanted sideways a little bit. The villains are starting to rise up as the heroes are falling down. This issue now, it's completely vertical and they're both equal. I'm assuming 4 is going to continue the push where villains will be mostly on top, heroes mostly on the bottom. 5 will be back to half and half with heroes on the bottom, villains on top. So that made me wonder, well, if it's 5, then that works. If it's 6, then there's got to be some other, you know, machination there. If it's 9, though, then it's got to rotate all the way back around.
Right. Which it's definitely 9 issues.
If it puts the heroes back on top, then
right.
I guess the axis is just part of the miniseries, not the ongoing inversion. But, I mean, I guess whatever. But right. That's just something I noticed with the covers, looking at them over the last
couple. No, I mean, it's cool design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it is a 9-issue limited series.
All right, so I guess it's going to rotate all the way back around, put the heroes
yes.
back on top. So.
Eventually. So, as I was saying, you know, the Deadpool issue really does kind of spoil where Axis is going. You know, kind of disappointed in that, but I definitely enjoyed this issue. You know, I might as well just start talking about Axis number 3, and my favorite part of it was Deadpool. You know, Remender really has a great voice for Deadpool. I don't necessarily agree with the voice that he's given some of the other characters. Mm-hmm. In the book, Iron Man especially, Sam Wilson, the new Captain America, Steve Rogers. I'm not a fan of how he characterizes these characters. I don't think that they speak when he writes them the way I think they should speak. But the way he writes Deadpool, Deadpool is the star of his books. You know, I was a fan of Remender's X-Force work, and Deadpool was front and center in that book.
Right.
You know, a lot of people like to think that was a Wolverine-centric book because he was leading this team of killers, and Phantom X really stole a lot of the scenes, but I think Deadpool was front and center, the star of that book, and I think Remender's really got a good voice for him. You know, the same way I think Duggan has one on the solo title, I think Remender has a great voice for Deadpool when he's doing Deadpool in these big team books. If you read Axis number 3, you will see there's a great, great scene with Deadpool. If I had a scene of the week as opposed to just a click of the week, that would be my favorite scene because it made me laugh out loud when I
read it. Well, it's definitely one that I plan on getting to, you know.
Right.
I would have done it yesterday if I'd had the chance. So I sure. do hope to get back to it.
Sure. Right. So then that's that, and I only have one more book on my list, and that's Avengers number 37.
Which I was able to read because I did actually read this on Tuesday.
Yay!
Had some time.
Yay! So what do you think?
I hate to say it, but the time runs out thing running in the Avengers books is drawing me in. I'm enjoying, I mean, I've enjoyed New Avengers, you know, quite a bit the last 6 months,
right.
But now I'm starting to get into Avengers now that I'm a little more, you know, comfortable switching teams here. And, you know, I like this particular issue because it explained a lot more of what was going on. Because it was really confusing the first chapter of this book where suddenly everyone's on the run and they're trying to get away from Iron Man and Sue Storm and you didn't know why. And, you know, this one is now showing everything from the S.H.I.E.L.D. side of things. And explaining, you know, what happened to put everything in the situation where they are now.
Right.
And it also shows that there's a mole within the S.H.I.E.L.D. organization.
Right.
You know, which adds that little bit of drama to it. Give me some of that.
The mole.
Got something there. You gotta watch out for that mole. So.
Moly.
This definitely helped to kind of explain things and make me a little more comfortable in the story where now I'm not as confused. I mean, there's still some things that they haven't quite given away.
Listen, it's Hickman, of course.
Yeah, yes, well, I've been told
this. Mumbo jumbo.
But nonetheless, I really did enjoy this. It gave me some of that information that I've been looking for, so I didn't feel like I was an idiot that was missing something. You know, it has been purposely withheld. And so getting these little nuggets of why S.H.I.E.L.D. is going after them and, you know, how... What they did obviously had moral complications, but you're seeing that there were actual, if you want to say, real politic type of reverberations that came out of what they did and when it became public and how everybody found out and all these, you know, issues that they've had to deal with kind of outside of the normal superheroing.
Right.
You know, you see a nail, you hit it with a hammer, but, you know, what happens if that nail doesn't belong to you? What if you're nailing it into the wrong piece of wood? You know, that type of situations are kind of what they're dealing with here. And so we're seeing that everything we thought that was, it looked like some of the good guys had turned bad, and then it looked like maybe the ones you thought were bad were the ones that were actually good, and now it looks like they may all kind of actually be good coming at it from
different perspectives.
Yeah, so that definitely helped, and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
This is, you know, Hickman, I think this is his MO, where they, you know, he's confusing you and then drops a whole bunch of exposition and explanation to move the story along and then gets back into it. And I like that this book ended on a pretty good cliffhanger. And, you know, as you said, it explains a lot. And it filled me in on where we are at this point. So I enjoyed this book. This was in my it's a candidate for Click of the Week for me as well.
Okay. All right.
I did read some DC. If you did get to some DC this week,
actually, I read a Marvel book. Beyond that,
okay.
I did read the new Cyclops.
Okay, what'd you think?
I have been a fan of the Cyclops story. This version of Cyclops is one that is actually a good hero that you can enjoy. He's in deep space with his dad, you know, with the Starjammers. They were stranded. They've got rescued. And then Scott makes a small blunder, and they end up in the hands of another pirate. And so now the Starjammers are... basically put into a Empire Strikes Back scenario, and I'll say that much about it. They're put into this bad situation, and now Cyclops, his dad actually sets him up to be the hero, and now Cyclops has to figure out how to capitalize and follow through.
Oh, interesting.
So it makes that kind of character-defining moment. This ends on a cliffhanger, you know, so to speak. You don't know yet if he's figured out a way to capitalize. You don't know yet if he's going to follow through. But a lot of what this book has been is dealing with the fact that he's young, he's inexperienced, he's immature, he's unsure of himself.
He's also out of time. I mean, you know,
yes.
He's from a different time. So that
right. Is, well, not only a different time, but now he's in deep space.
Right.
You know, so not only have you been thrown into the future, but you've been thrown into the future and then out among the stars. So dealing with all of that, he's really, you know, he makes, you know, two steps forward, one step back, it seems like every time. So now he's been put into one of these situations where two steps back is going to mean everyone's dead. So now he's got to stand up and, you know, really take charge of the situation. So I'm liking it quite a bit, and it really makes me like the character, considering all the terrible things that they've done with him in the other books.
It gives you a Cyclops to root for. That's very funny.
Yes, exactly. All right, let's see if I can find... Everything's going really slow tonight because I had all those news tabs open, so nothing wants to quite work the way it should. I'm trying to get through... some of these IDW books, and it just keeps skipping past everything. Slow down. All right, here we go. X-Files. I actually read X-Files.
Okay.
I will tell you right now, I, you know, was a big fan of the X-Files when it was on up until about the time of the first movie, and then after the first movie, they switched from Vancouver to L.A., and it became much more hip and glossy and... I wasn't as much of a fan of the X-Files in the later years. And so when they did this series, I decided to give it a chance, and I just really didn't like the tone of the first several issues. Okay. So I stepped away, and then they announced that they are bringing back Millennium as a comic book series from IDW. For those unfamiliar, Millennium was the sister program to X-Files, whereas X-Files dealt with ghosts and UFOs and poltergeists and whatever. Millennium was the show that dealt with angels and demons and things of more of the religious aspect, as opposed to, you know, random Bigfoot or whatever. And so they announced the return of Millennium, and they did. They announced it at New York Comic Con because in this issue, Frank Black, the character from Millennium, reappears. And so they announced it, of course, the week before the book comes out where he makes his appearance. So I read the last issue, and I read this issue. It's a two-part story, and it's fine for what it is.
Okay.
But it's not... The problem is, because it's X-Files... X-Files and Millennium had two different tones going on. Millennium was much darker and was much deeper. X-Files was much more of, hey, there's something goofy going on. I think we know what it is. And then everything gets away from it, and it kind of ends ambiguously. And that's what happens in this book. There's something going on. It looks like it's going to be some sort of take on a political issue, and then it really turns out that's a red herring. It's all about, it looks like there's this girl that may be possessed by a demon. Frank Black appears. He's done some background. He basically slides them some files and, you know, just kind of gives them some information and then disappears off into the night, you know, does his little drop-in. And it just kind of ends... You know, well, maybe she was possessed by a demon. Maybe she was just a bad person. But we don't know why all these people went blind and started gouging their eyeballs out. And that's the end of the issue, you know. So it really, it kind of played off in season 7 of the X-Files. After Millennium ended, they did a crossover episode with Frank Black from Millennium on an episode of X-Files. And the big complaint people had was, even though they had the character from Millennium on there, it was an X-Files episode. So it played like an episode. So it was a lot goofier. It had to do with zombies coming back. And, you know, it was, I don't know, just kind of this goofy thing. And this played along those same lines. So the question is that the tone that the series is going to take in January when it begins? Or is that just the tone of this issue kind of riffing off that episode of the TV series? When the actual series itself comes out, will it you know, go back to its much darker themes? And so I was excited for the character to come back. I loved Millennium as a TV show, and so seeing him here was a lot of fun, and I was happy. You know, I had to have them because they're going to tie in with Millennium, and I just love the character of Frank Black and everything. But it does play more like an X-Files, so I'm not converted back to X-Files. I'm not going to be picking up X-Files, you know, from here on out or anything like that. But I am still looking forward to the Millennium series when it comes out. So,
all right,
that was that. All right, now into DC. What was the DC that you read?
I read a couple of books. I read The Flash number 35.
Okay, I started to read that, but I kind of gave up on it.
I am not so happy with where this book is going.
So I'm not alone.
Yeah, I had trouble finishing it. I don't blame you. I absolutely sympathize with how you feel about this. I was reading this I wasn't all that familiar with what had happened previously. I understood what was going on only on a very cursory level. Ultimately, I'm not happy with where, you know, I feel like I've read this before. Maybe it's just a different take on what's happened before, you know, with the Blue Armor Flash or whatever it is that's going on, and some Speed Force issues. And I just wasn't very keen on continuing the story. Let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having read it and knowing that, all right, am I going to pick up the next issue? Maybe for academic purposes, you know, for our review purposes, but I wouldn't be buying this on a regular basis because I just wasn't keen on what was going on.
My biggest problem is visually on this book. I'm not a big fan of the Brett Bruce artwork. I know Tim Dodd loves Brett Bruce.
Yes, Tim.
I am not a big fan.
It's the faces, right?
That's part of it. Part of it is that, and part of it is the fact that every time he draws the Flash in costume, even if Flash is standing still and not doing anything, there's 10,000 lightning bolts shooting out of him.
Mm.
And at one point in this book, you've got Flash and another Flash.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some sort of time warp mix-up thing going on. And so there's, like, it's... You can kind of make out the shape of three bodies amidst the 10,000 bolts of lightning that are streaking across the page.
Right.
It's just not visually appealing. It's kind of hard to follow. He likes to do a lot of stuff where instead of drawing rectangular boxes...
panels.
You know, just, yeah, for your eye to follow, he does right. these kind of weird trapezoid shapes and triangles and... to me, it's just so distracting, and it's hard to follow.
I find much more fault with the story than I do with the art. That's my
point. But see, I didn't get all the way through the story. I just got to the point where these three Flashes are just kind of yelling at each other amidst fire and lightning bolts. And I also, one thing I really noticed on this book that stands out to me is the lettering. And I know that sounds weird, but...
Not at all.
With as many comics as I read... I pick up this one, and the lettering is so completely different from the style used in pretty much any other comic that you pick up. It has this weird... It almost looks like a cartoony font that they're using, and it looks totally like it's a computerized font. It's not, you know, handwritten or anything like that, but it's, you know, probably based off a handwritten font. But it just looks like it belongs in... like Diary of a Wimpy Kid or Big Nate or some sort of kid's book. It just looks out of place in here. And
I see what you mean.
It just looks wrong in, you know, a modern superhero comic. And so just everything about the book just kept taking me out of it. And
you know what's funny? I only noticed that there's a couple of really bold word balloons. And I did notice that. It didn't bother me to that extent that I would say, oh, you know, wait, there's something wrong with that. But I definitely noticed that. Now that I look at it again, I'm inclined to agree.
Yeah, there's just something that's off about it that I just can't place what exactly it is. But there's just something about that that bothers me. So, you know, overall, I've loved Flash. The series, you know, so far in the New 52, I thought the previous writer and artist did a really good job. Of course, they left to go work on Detective for a while.
Right.
And I'm just not digging what's going on right now. But, you know, eventually it's one of those things I'm sure I'll let another one or two issues come out and I'll kind of see where it's headed. And I may go back and read, or I may just wait for the next arc and just, you know, jump on there. But,
right.
Not super excited about Flash right now.
I read Batman Eternal. I'm glad I stopped reading it.
I am not caught up on it at all.
It's just it was very difficult for me to read. Did you read what is that? Arkham Manor number one?
I did.
What'd you think?
It was okay. It was not anything too terribly special.
Agreed.
Apparently, in Batman Eternal, at some point, Bruce Wayne loses the Wayne fortune, I guess.
It must have happened in one of those issues I didn't read.
And Arkham Asylum got blown up, I guess, at some point.
Maybe in the future, because I think it's still there when I'm reading it, but I don't know. It's hard to tell. Isn't that terrible?
So, basically, the city just decides to use eminent domain, takeover...
boo, government!
Yeah, no doubt. So, Bruce just basically has to concrete over the hidden door behind the grandfather clock that goes down to the Batcave and just let them take it over and turn it into Arkham Manor.
Right.
And so he's living in the basement of the insane asylum, which, on the one hand, he thinks will help him... you know, keep a better eye on everybody. But then on the other hand, a couple murders take place. And so
the best way for him to investigate?
Well, it works.
Tell us, dirt.
it works so well when he was looking into Hugo Strange that he decides that he must get himself committed into them. That way he can see what's happening from the inside.
God, so bad. It turned me off right there. As soon as I saw that, oh no.
My biggest problem is this felt like this could be the story in an annual or the story in a two-issue filler.
Elseworlds or something.
Not necessarily this needs to be its own series, because I don't see how this continues past six issues. I mean, and to be honest, it should be two. But they're going to make it, you know, you at least have to get six. That's your first arc. You know, that's your trade paperback. And I just don't see how the concept goes beyond. It's a one-trick pony that they're making a series out of. And I just don't see it being interesting enough to continue unless it's going to be just, hey, here's spotlights of a bunch of villains. But that's basically what Legends of the Dark Knight was. And that got canceled. So I don't see how they make this into anything compelling that you want to keep reading. You know, unlike what was the one a couple weeks ago, the Gotham Academy, I think.
Yes, Gotham Academy, right.
Like that one I was interested in. I didn't think I would be, and I was. This one I thought I would
have better characters in it.
Read it and just didn't really do much for me.
We'll see where this goes, but you know, this is so one of the things you mentioned is that this is like a Batman annual story or maybe a mild Batman crossover. It shouldn't be its own book. What was I saying earlier about some of these related titles, you know, kind of oversaturating the market? I think this is one too many Batman books.
Yeah. Yep.
Did you read Deathstroke number one?
I did not.
I actually wasn't that, you know,
can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, I can hear you. Check one. I can hear you.
Okay.
So Deathstroke number one, I heard you say that you did not read this. I'm not going to spoil too much. It was actually fairly action packed. This is Tony Daniel, the artist, now also writing the book. You know, there's plenty of action in this. It gives Daniel some opportunities to really, you know, draw some cool fight scenes. Am I keen on the character being developed this way? Well, you know, I always harp on the fact that I'm old school Wolfman Perez Titans, and I remember Deathstroke being a certain way, but that's obviously pre-Crisis. That's a long time ago now. So now we have this incarnation of Deathstroke, and you know, the art is pretty. The last page of the book is a cliffhanger, trying to entice you to read the next book. It's kind of confusing though as to how much of a cliffhanger this is. One distinguishing feature of Slade Wilson has been changed in as of the last page of this book, which is the cliffhanger. So I guess that's maybe enough to get you to, you know, buy the next one and read the next one. I don't know.
The key thing has changed. Did it grow his eyeball back?
Hey, you figured it out.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't even have a chance to hit the spoiler alert.
I just threw that out because I just thought to myself.
But what's distinguishing, right? Well, I gave you a good hint. So
but you gave me a good hint of a bad idea.
Yeah. So ultimately, you know, when you flip through this dirt, you'll see what I mean. And listen, is it going to entice me into reading the next issue? Probably not. Was I impressed enough to want to read the next issue? No. But if you're a fan of the character, hey, this is his chance to shine.
I don't know. I liked the last series when it began with Deathstroke. With the original, you know, New 52 relaunch of Deathstroke. I thought it was a really good series. Then they handed it to Liefeld for a couple issues, and it just went down the toilet and never recovered. I mean, I was looking forward to it because I do enjoy the character, for whatever reason, I just didn't feel like it was one of those things I had to rush to read right. like some other stuff this week. And also, just to let you know, at the beginning of your review of that, it got really super choppy for me. I don't know if it's just my connection or if it recorded that way, but for anybody listening at home, if that broke up on you, that's not just you. It happened to me, too. So I think your neighbors downstairs are, you know, streaming HBO torrents or something like that.
All right.
Let's see here.
Anything else? I mean, it's not like we have to go through rapid reviews because we don't have anyone else.
I did read Superman.
How was that? I didn't have a chance to read that.
Well, they introduced a character called Ulysses.
Yes.
And he's, you know, a small child as part of this utopian science project. So he got shunted off to the fourth dimension. He comes back. He's got powers similar to Superman's, and he and Superman are basically the only two that, you know, kind of have this life in common. And basically what happens is a character called the Machinist appears, and he sells weapons. He sells these super modernized, AI weapons to the world. And so they track him down, and they're, you know, destroying his weapons, and Ulysses basically says, we need to destroy all the weapons on Earth. And Superman says, well, you can't do that. People have to, they have a right to them, and you just have to show them a better way to live, but you can't make the decision for them. People have to make that decision on their own. And Ulysses basically says, nope. And he starts this pirate broadcast to the world, and he says, I'm building an ark, and everybody that wants to be safe, you come with me.
Are you serious?
The rest of you, we'll see what happens.
Oh. My God. It's always an ark.
Yeah, well, I don't see that. He doesn't call it an ark. It's just a really big ship. But regardless, I at least like the fact that they've made the hippie into the villain. At least that part makes me happy.
Gotcha.
So... That's funny. I'm good on that, but I mean it's a slow burning story. I think is kind of the problem. With it being John Romita Jr. working with Geoff Johns, I was hoping for more explosions.
How long has this been going on? This third issue now or the fourth issue?
I want to say it's the fourth.
Okay.
Well,
it was 32. I think was the first one. So it's 32, 33, 34, 35. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
So. I mean, I guess it has the ability to redeem itself, seeing where it goes in the future. You never know what they have in store for the final chapter. But I mean, for now, it's just kind of one of those things where, I don't know, a character jumps the gun, is going to be misunderstood. It's kind of the thing that happens in comics.
Yeah. All right.
I did read Future's End.
Oh, okay. What happened there?
Not a whole lot, really. This is one of those...
Wait, we are up to issue 25?
Yep.
There have been 25 weeks of this stuff already?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
One more issue and then you're halfway through.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's really... I mean, it's not bad. I'm not going to say it's bad, but this particular issue is really just about kind of wrapping up a couple things that have been happening recently and kind of pushing things forward to the next step.
Okay.
So, like, Superman, for whatever reason, after the giant Earth 2 invasion and the fight with Darkseid and everything, he went into seclusion. He's been in Africa just, you know, digging wells and irrigating farms and, you know, trying to help out, you know, one village at a time instead of helping the entire world, you know.
Good job, Strips. Way to do it correctly.
And Brainiac has sent this this android to Earth, and the android character appears, and you don't really know why he's there, what his connection is with anything. You just see this thing kind of rise up and start heading off, and you don't really know what he's doing. And John Constantine is the one who figures out that this thing is a probe from Brainiac, and it basically sent this thing to Earth to basically figure out where Superman's power level is at. So Superman fights this thing, defeats it, and thinks he's got the battle won, and John Constantine, always being the sour note, He's the one that has to tell him, well, actually, he was here to figure out how strong you are, and now he knows, and he's heading towards Earth, and now we're all screwed. So that was really the big push out of this particular issue. I mean, you got some other stuff going on. Firestorm has broken apart. The two guys have decided that they're, you know, they're not going to be friends anymore. They're not going to work to be Firestorm ever again. You know, you've got the jock and the nerd.
Yes.
And, you know, forced to be friends. And that particular series was pretty terrible. But what they did here, though, is they've made it where the jock has finally realized that he misses being in the spotlight. You know, the whole he hated having to share the power with this other person that he didn't necessarily like, but it was worth it just to be the guy who gets to hang out with the Justice League, you know, just to be the guy who saves the day and gets on the cover of Time Magazine, you know, or Entertainment Weekly or whatever it is he can do. And he misses that spotlight. So he's actually starting to fiend for attention, which kind of puts him in a different, you know, mindset of being a hero. So it's going to be interesting. And of course, you know, no one wants to go along with him, you know, so he's kind of stuck trying to figure out how to force this to happen. So be interesting to see what kind of happens there. But again, I'm not going to say this is a bad issue, but it's just moving things along to get to where it's going to be exciting. But this particular issue is not, you know, anything too terribly exciting of the story.
Lovely. God, I stopped reading that like months ago. I can't believe they're up to issue 25.
I think if you went back to issue 7 or 8 and just started from there, you'd be fine.
All right. Let's see. I think covers what I read. What? Oh, you read Red Lanterns also?
I did read Red Lanterns because I like Godhead. But this kind of like Green Lantern Corps is just a...
just a filler issue.
Yeah, it's just kind of letting you know what's going on with them while everything else is happening. It's the important stuff is happening elsewhere, and so this is kind of how they're getting pulled into it. So it's going to lead to them doing something exciting, but this particular thing is not anything exciting, you know, necessarily. The only real big thing is when the new gods come down to attack Guy Gardner to take his ring, because humans should not have that type of power at their disposal, they've decided. Highfather basically calls out to them and says, ignore them, leave them, come back, because I think I have it figured out.
Right. So
this trying to find the life equation is the whole thing he's been building to, you know, breaking through the source wall, getting through the power on the other side. Apparently he's figured it out. He knows how it's going to work, so that's leading into what will be a more exciting chapter next week. But this one is just kind of the letting you know what's going on with some of the other people.
Right. Before you start asking, what happened to Guy Gardner? Where's Simon Baz? There they are.
Yeah, unfortunately, Baz is still there.
All right.
So that's about all I read.
Yeah, no need to cover, no rapid reviews because we covered what we read this week. So, click of the week time, I guess.
So, you are going with Avengers?
I'm going with She-Hulk number 9.
Oh, She-Hulk.
I was very close to Avengers 37, but She-Hulk number 9,
It's 9.
It is number 9. I'm going to stick with it. She-Hulk number 9.
And that's not
I enjoyed this book. No. Shout out to Charles Soule, my man. Did I show you what he signed my copy of She-Hulk number 1 as? Oh, no, I think I put it away already. He signed it Charles D. Soule, Esquire.
Oh, I see. Was he with Bill S. Preston when he did that?
I'm sorry?
Was he with Bill S. Preston, Esquire, when he did that?
Oh, no. wait, where's the drum line? There you go.
I just because Bat-Cow is in it, I almost want to do Infinity Man and Forever People 4, but Bat-Cow is not enough to save that book.
That's a great cover.
It's worth reading just to see them interact with Bat-Cow. I was somewhat limited in what I read, but I think I am going to go with Cyclops 6. you know, like I said, I really like what they're doing with the character. I really like the story. I really like how they're trying to build him up. You know, he keeps falling down so that he can get back up and dust himself off and try to move forward. So I like that, you know, message and the storyline going into it. So I have enjoyed this, and that's going to be my click of the week.
Nice. Nice. All righty. So we'll wrap up this week's show. I did want to throw an apology out there. I have not been able to complete my my article on New York Comic Con 2014. It's in a very late draft stage. I've got my pictures uploaded. I just have to put it together. And I wanted to show one of the things I got. I don't know if I showed this the last time. It's the Captain America Marvel Now artifact statue from Kotobukiya.
Ooh.
Yes.
How much is that? $300?
No, this is on the cheaper side. They were selling it for $60, but I picked it up on the Sunday as the show lights were dimming. And I got it for a little less than $50.
All right, then.
So,
hey, just because you're in New York, I want to warn you, breaking news is that the doctor in New York City has tested positive for Ebola. So you now have Ebola. And apparently, he tried to isolate himself, but it was really kind of hard, so he got on a bus and traveled around town.
Wonderful!
Yeah.
Good job. Good job. Now I can go to sleep with that in mind.
Yeah, well, just, I mean, hey, if you catch Ebola, it takes like 21 days before it really gets bad, so you can at least do 3 more episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles before you start bleeding out of your eyeballs.
Lovely. And on that note, we forgot to plug, we got to plug a couple of sites, a couple of people. We should plug PopCultureNetwork.com, that is your site. Make sure that you go and visit that for some deals and some good product out there.
We also do comic previews. We do some toy reviews. We do.
Yeah, but I'm trying to make money.
Actually, I want to show you real quick here. We randomly get stuff in the mail to do reviews of, unsolicited, that people send us because they want us to review. And I have the 20 DVD collection of Sergeant Bilko,
wow,
the Phil Silver show. They sent 48 hours.
Oh, my God.
48.2 hours of TV from, what is this, 1959, I think, something like that. 59 through 62, so there you go. If you want to know what's going on with that, I'll be sitting down to watch a whole bunch of these the next week or so.
Yikes! What's the shop that we need to plug?
Oh, you can just go to popculturenetwork.com. There'll be a link there.
Okay, cool. Because I wanted to ask, are you going to have the Breaking Bad action figures?
We already had the Breaking Bad action figures. They're already gone.
Nice.
The moment the news came out that Toys R Us was pulling them, every single one we had in stock sold.
Nice. Good job. Good job. All righty. Who else can we plug? Oh, we are a – well, we're going to plug the ClickNation.com. That is our home website for the Comic Book Chronicles. We are also a member of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. You can find our show on the Cold Slither Podcast .com webpage. Make sure to tune into our affiliated shows on the Cold Slither network, Cold Slither Podcast Network. Let's see, what else do we need to plug? Make sure to check us out on your favorite social media. That is hashtag Comic Book Chronicles. And what else? I forget the spiel because I'm so used to hearing it.
Go to facebook.com/TheClickNation.
There you go.
Search for The Click Nation. You can go to Twitter, look for @TheClickNation. You can go to SoundCloud, look for The Click Nation. You can go to YouTube, look for The Click Nation.
We're everywhere. You'll be joining us soon. Oh, wait, that's Cold Slither Podcast.
@Cold Slither Pod, is that what it is?
Yes. That is the Twitter account. All righty. So with that, we will bid you adieu. We'll be back next week. Hopefully we'll have a full roster in effect. We'll have more stuff to talk about. You know, we'll dissect the Avengers trailer some more. We could do worse. We could do worse.
All right. All right, guys. Well, again, thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Signing off. Hey!